This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Okay. This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I'm just waiting for my guest to call in, and while we're waiting, he should be calling in soon. So I will be able to really tell you a little bit about at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to a wonderful author. It's his debut book, and you know, I always like to give authors a chance when they have a debut book to come and talk about it. And it's interesting that the name of it is called Small Joys, and it is by Elvin James Mensah. And so Elvin will be joining me at the bottom of the hour. And meanwhile, what I want to do is let's go ahead and let's get a poem loaded up. I want to play a poem for you today. It is, of course, April is National Poetry Month. And the fascinating thing for me about poetry is that it opens your mind to words, to just listening to words, because words are so important when you're, you know, you thinking about writing and you say, well, how am I going to start writing? You know, every time I start this program, I say, this is for people who are dreaming of writing. And so you're dreaming of writing, you're thinking, I want to write something, and you haven't done it. And I was so happy during NaNoWriMo in November that five of my listeners actually finished NaNoWriMo and wrote a novel, 50,000 words, in a month. But they did it, and it was hard. All five of them, four of them are actually working full-time jobs, and one is retired now. But they wrote 50,000 words in a month. And then just a few weeks ago, I was talking to somebody, actually in my condo development down by the pool. I was sitting around the pool. On a nice day, it's great for me. I can take my books and sit down there and read. And a lady came up to me. She's new to the condo. She said, well, I heard that you talk about books. I said, yes, I do. And she said, well, I see that you like to read. I said, yeah, because I already had a big pile next to me. And she said, well, I've always wanted to write. And she says, you know, I just retired. She had just bought this condo because she retired from up north, and she came down here. And she said, I've always wanted to write, and I don't think I can. And I said, well, why not? She had a nice job, a job certainly that required her to read, a job that required her to write reports. And I was so surprised that, you know, she has a college degree, and yet she doubts her ability to sit down and write. And I said, well, just start very slowly, very easily. She, of course, said, you know, I've been really busy over the past years working, you know, a big job, and I didn't do a lot of reading. I said, well, now that's why you have a pool here in Florida, and you're sitting here, and you can see, you know, what you're going to do. So hold on, I think my caller is actually calling my cell phone. Hello. Do I have my call on? Okay. Still. Okay, well, I don't know. I think he's not going to make it today. It looks like it. Because I don't know where he is. And it's funny. It's a sci-fi book about another time and another place. And okay, we'll play a poem. Let's play a poem, and then we'll see if we can get through.
Modern Love by John Keats. And what is love? It is a doll dressed up for idleness to cosset, nurse, and dandle. a thing of soft misnomers, so divine that silly youth doth think to make itself divine by loving, and so goes on yawning and doting a whole summer long, till Mrs. Coombe is made a pearl tiara, and common Wellingtons turn Romeo boots. Then Cleopatra lives at number 7, and Antony resides in Brunswick Square. Fools! If some passions high have warmed the world, if queens and soldiers have played deep with hearts, it is no reason why such agonies should be more common than the growth of weeds. Fools! Make me whole again, that weighty pearl the Queen of Egypt melted, and I'll say that ye may love in spite of beaver hats.
Sometimes I feel like giving up and throwing in the towel. Sometimes I can't hardly face another day. I am assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good. Sometimes the clouds hang low.
Are you there? Oh, we're just waiting for him now. Hold on.
I am assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good.
I'm back. I don't know what happened to my guest, but he's sending me messages on my cell phone, which doesn't help us because we can't do the cell phone. Anyway, Ed is trying to get him. Maybe he's going to call in, and if he does, we'll talk to him. And it's it's one of those dates. I had a feeling today. I have computer problems, and whenever you have computer problems, you go a little crazy. So I'm so happy that my guest is finally on the phone. Raymond, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Raymond. Okay.
Sorry about that. I had a bad phone, and my phone wasn't working right.
So. Okay. Well, I'm happy that you're here. And it's Raymond Hunter, and the name of his book is Planet Saviors. And when I first heard about you, I heard that you were a mathematician and that you, of course, have interest in this sci-fi, and your book is interesting. It's a nice concept, and particularly in these days when we're facing the whole world is facing this artificial intelligence. Tell us about your book.
Well, I sent a summary along. Do you want me to just read out? Should I do that?
Well, what you tell us, just tell us about it. Tell us about Stella, because Stella is, what I liked about Stella is that here she is on another planet, and she, she watches some American television.
And yeah, she's different. The world she lives in, everybody is a genetically engineered for Christmas. They serve for perfection. And she achieved physical perfection. She's absolutely stunning, beautiful, very intelligent. But she doesn't agree with some of the values that her culture has. Just perfection, she doesn't buy into it at all. She thinks it's kind of boring. And but she feels that it's her duty to turn their head around and see that they should really be going back to the old ways. They've had a lot more fun. And so that's her gripe with her society. And for a while, all she can do is gripe. But then one day she stumbles on a TV that picks up broadcasts from Earth from the 1980s sitcoms. And she absolutely spellbound by the sitcoms because those people are so happy. And they live such rich, full lives. But that's what she wants for her planet, too.
So she manages to, it's nice that on her planet she can apply for a grant for interstellar transportation, so she can visit Earth, and it's nice that in another planet they're also working on grant applications. So she gets a grant, and she gets to come to the United States. And are you there, Raymond? Okay, well, it looks like we lost him. I don't know. It's a day. Okay, well, I don't think we're going to be able to get him through. So let's go ahead. I will again mention his book. It's called Planet Saviors. And, oh, he's calling back. We better put him back on. So let's see if we can get a little bit more out of Raymond today. Raymond, so we were talking about Stella. Now, okay, that's good, Raymond. So Stella watches American television. She sees a lot of sitcoms. Decides that America is a land. Well, the world here on Earth is people have a lot of joy, which is very funny because I thought today I have two books that I'm talking about, and your book Planet Saviors also talks about joy and finding joy. So Stella gets to Earth and she finds joy in a big way, doesn't she?
Oh, she's very attractive and attracts attention.
Yeah, she attracts attention. It gets a lot of a lot of attention because she's good looking, and then she starts investigating why America, well, particularly America, since she landed him, why it's so much different from her planet where everybody has everything they want. It's a planet where everybody has everything they want. They have no needs. They have health care. They have everything. All their needs are met. They don't have to worry about anything. It's a planet, that people are always sort of dreaming about. That's the perfect place to go. But she finds it a bit boring, right?
Yes. And purposeless.
And purposeless. That's right. There's if everything's provided for you and nobody has to do anything, as she says, everybody on her planet are their couch potatoes.
That's right.
So what do you think about the situation in the world? I liked when you're talking about influencers and how we get influenced here on Earth by influencers giving us ideas about what to do, where to go. And, of course, on her planet, they don't have that.
Right. That's correct.
So what else, when you were thinking about this this concept of outer space and planets that are inhabited, do you believe in that? Do you think there are planets out there?
Well, I think, personally, I think it's hard to not believe in it. I mean, when you look at the Webb telescope, pictures that are sending back, and the universe is much bigger than it's ours. And the sun doesn't appear to be any extraordinary object. There's nothing about the evolution that speaks to the Earth. It can never be this very way. All the conditions are right. And there are many, many samples, but part of it, we're the only ones. So, and that's part of the book, that they can compare us with other planets, other similar planets in the universe, and evaluate us on a different kind of basis. It's hard to have an objective standard of how we're doing, but it doesn't really think we're a superior race, so we're doing a great job. On what basis do you say that? Here she has a different basis. She's other planets are very similar systems. situations. And there's a focus there. It's an important part of the book. That's the Federation of the United Planets. They have a survey that goes on periodically, like January or something like that. And they survey the developing worlds to make sure they don't get their hands on some of the formulas for big bombs that could do a lot of damage. If the developing world does that sort of thing, they intervene to stop it. Otherwise, they use it very long. So they've been to Earth many times in the past. And it's kind of, she's also in love with this guy named John. And he's an interesting character, but she's trying to convince him that she's for real. But the first, of course, he doesn't believe it. And we talk about a number of different topics. So one of the things is the focal point, the focal point comes out into the open. And John, at first, doesn't believe that. And then she tells her story.
Well, you know, for John and for all of the one thing that, of course, she found by coming here to Earth, that it's a friendly place. She made a lot of friends. Of course, yeah. She learned a lot about our history. And because of the ability, of course, having high intelligence and research abilities, she could look at a lot of things in the world. Well, in Earth, and so all of her adventures, and of course, as you said, because she's very attractive and meets a lot of men who are very interested in her. So you had fun writing this book, didn't you?
It was a bomb.
Huh?
It was a bomb.
Yeah. So it's isn't it wonderful? I mean, you know, as you wrote about that, you know, you're a mathematician by nature, and mathematicians anyway have their heads in the clouds. So being able to have an imagination is something that Stella wants and is trying to discover here on Earth, because in her land, they don't need anything. They don't have to think about anything. They don't have to come out with inventions. And like for me, you know, I'm an inventor also. So, you know, I have patents, and I'm always thinking about things. And one of the fun things when I saw your bio, and they said that you've written articles about mathematics, I do quadratic equations for fun. That's what I like to do.
Well, I don't do that for fun. Sorry about that. But I do think, you know, mathematics really is two worlds. It's one world where you do computational mathematics, well, you better be good at arithmetic and that sort of thing. There's another world where it's totally pure thought, and you don't know what use it's ever going to be, but it's beautiful in and of itself. And so you're really an artist if you're that kind of mathematician.
That's true. Really, mathematics can be so, so beautiful. And, of course, it's great for our minds. And writing, what you've done, sitting down and writing your book, coming out with your story. There are so many clever parts to the book, very interesting ideas and concepts. So I just want to tell you that I admire what you've done and that you've made this book and brought it to life. And as I said, Stella is an interesting character. I hope that you have some more fun continuing probably the story. Are you going to be writing some more?
We'll see how the first round goes.
Well,
how much interest there is in this, and then I'll continue if there's interest.
Well, you know, it's fun. It's an opportunity for you to get out there, and now that we're through the pandemic, then you can meet people and talk about your book. It's called Planet Saviors, and it did win a gold badge from the International Review of Books, and you had some nice comments written about it, which is very nice. And I think that you know, Raymond, you've done a good job, and I want to just congratulate you on having your book released. And again, it's called Planet Saviors. It's available online, and people can get it there. And Raymond, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. Okay? Bye-bye. All right. Okay, the connection was a little bad, but, you know, this is what I talk about here, that it's so much fun to write a book You have an idea, and he's put, I think, quite a few years into this of writing and preparing it, editing it, and all of that that goes into coming out with a book. And it's not easy to get out there and promote a book when you don't know how to do it, when you haven't had the experience. But you can learn everything. You know, you get better with each interview. You get better with each time that you get out and meet people. And it's nice. I think that's one of the things that helps authors is to meet people who read their books and say nice things to them, because it really does make you feel good. It really does. I think a lot of writers miss that during the pandemic. The Zoom was nice and all of that. And sometimes you could reach maybe more people in a meeting, but that personal connection that writers have is so important. Now, I'm going to get back to the subject of which I was talking about earlier, about poetry as an opportunity of why we should read poetry, why we should write poetry. And when because of the disconnect with Raymond, we went ahead and played the poem. But have it ready again, Ed, because I'm going to play it again. Because this is one of the things about poetry, in a way I wasn't able to explain a little bit about the poem and about the narrator. Nicholas Guy Smith is just a fantastic narrator. You can listen to his voice for hours and hours and hours, and I do. But I want to play this poem again. It's called Modern Love, and it's by John Keats, one of my favorite poets. He died very young at the age of 25. When I was in Rome, I went to his grave, and not far from him, Shelley is also buried in the same place. It's a cemetery for foreigners in Rome. And it's really heartbreaking to stand at his grave and to think about what he did in his short life. He struggled a lot. He studied to be a doctor, a surgeon. He was working at a hospital in London. But he wasn't born for that. He was born for words. And his magic of how I think he wrote 54 poems altogether in his short life, but each one is so special. And of course, this particular poem, what it is when it's called Modern Love, and remember this is back a long time ago because he died in 1825. It is talking about how you don't need the love stories of famous people. You don't need the love stories of Romeo and Juliet. You don't need the love stories of Anthony and Cleopatra. You don't need all of that. What you need is a simple story of the man down the street who's kind, the woman down the street who will bake a pie for you, just learning to love and appreciate the everyday things. So if you listen to this poem, if you listen to the words, you'll see that he's talking. That's why I want to play it again, because if you were listening, you heard him talking about Cleopatra and Anthony. And yet, at the same time, then he'll talk about Wellington boots, which for Americans, if you don't understand what Wellington boots are rubber boots. Because, of course, Wellington wore boots when he was slogging through the fields. But he's talking about everyday things, how important everyday things are, and that although we think about love in terms of Anthony and Cleopatra, great love, dramatic love, it's the everyday love that's so important. So let's listen to that poem again, and then I'll be back after a commercial.
Modern Love by John Keats. And what is love? It is a doll dressed up for idleness to cosset, nurse, and dandle. A thing of soft misnomers, so divine that silly youth doth think to make itself divine by loving, and so goes on yawning and doting a whole summer long, till Mrs. Coombe is made a pearl tiara, and common Wellingtons turn Romeo boots. Then Cleopatra lives at number 7, and Antony resides in Brunswick Square. Fools! If some passions high have warmed the world, if queens and soldiers have played deep with hearts, it is no reason why such agonies should be more common than the growth of weeds. Fools! Make me whole again, that weighty pearl the Queen of Egypt melted, and I'll say that ye may love in spite of beaver hats.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi! This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I'm waiting for my next caller. But meanwhile, why don't we go ahead and play Bria Burton's Book Buzz, because it is a great one.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 SF thriller, Upgrade, by Blake Crouch. The novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook, with stellar narration by Henry Leva. Now, let's download the book buzz. After a mass casualty event that landed him in jail, disgraced geneticist Logan Ramsey hopes to redeem himself by serving as an agent with a gene protection agency. A bad tip leads Logan into a trap, where he's exposed to some kind of virus laced with a DNA-modifying package. In a matter of weeks, Logan's intellect skyrockets. His physique even experiences painful alterations, and he's faster and stronger than ever. He's the victim of DNA hacking, but he's captured and detained at a black site under suspicion of illegal self-editing. When a mysterious visitor breaks him out of the facility, he takes the investigation into his own upgraded hands. Through his ramped-up reasoning and deduction, he discovers an encoded message in his own DNA, which leads him to a person he thought was long dead, and to a decision he doesn't want to make. With all the subtext of a classic Michael Crichton novel, Upgrade is a fast-paced techno-thriller that offers nuanced ethical dilemmas related to gene editing, and adds a splash of murder hornets. Author Blake Crouch is a best-selling novelist and screenwriter. His novels include Recursion, Dark Matter, and the Wayward Pines trilogy, which was adapted into a television series for Fox. Crouch also co-created the TNT show Good Behavior, based on his Letty Dobesch novellas. He is currently at work on a new book and showrunning the Dark Matter series adaptation for Apple TV+. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay, that's wonderful. Oh, Bria is so wonderful. I love her voice, and she's going to, I'm just waiting for her to pick a date when she wants to come back and do another co-hosting, well, host, take over the whole day for me when I go on a little trip. And so I'm just waiting to set some times, and we'll announce it soon. And I hope also Devon Miller will do the same thing and take a program and do another co-hosting job. They enjoy it, and they do it so well. And we'll see about Rita Moreau is going to come in and do some book buzzes, because she has a lot of fans who want her to talk about her, the way she does about their mysteries. And so I've got that coming up too. Lots of things happening, but not guests. Is this going to be funny today? Big Ed, how are you doing? You want to talk to me?
I'm just waiting on your guests.
Okay. What's new with you, Big Ed?
Not a whole lot.
What are you watching on? Are you watching sports? What's happening in sports?
No, actually, I was just checking my emails.
Yeah. So what teams are you for this year? What's your team anyway? You never tell me.
Oh, I mean, everybody's watching the Rays right now because they started the season undefeated.
So what do you think? They're going to make it this year?
Well, they got 12 wins in a row to open the season. They're going for 13 today, so they got a pretty good lead.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's not bad. Okay, well, you know, I don't know. I know. Some days, I guess I can just chat away. I don't know. This guy is supposed to be calling me, too. So what? I had a feeling about this day today. It's just one of those times. Well, let me think. I have to put on my thinking cap really fast here to tell you a couple of things. First of all, again, wonderful, wonderful things are happening in if you are an author and you're looking for an agent, I'm going to be having an agent next week on the program. And he is a big-time agent and somebody who really is fantastic. And he will be giving a lot of great advice for you and about how to get an agent, because it is a process. And he's an expert on it. He's been doing that for 30 years. And he also is an author. So I get sort of two things in one. One program I will be able to talk about how you find an agent, what you need to do. And then, of course, I will also get him to talk about his books, because I love his books. So this is also something happening. When I was thinking about the 8th anniversary of Joy on Paper, one of the things that was so wonderful for me to look back, as I was looking back at all of the people who have been on the program, including, the poet laureate, which is why April is an important month for me, because I read poetry almost every day. I've been doing that forever. And I love poetry because, well, I'm a busy person, and so you can pick up a book of poetry and just write, read a quick poem, get you in a good mood. And more and more, I think we're finding that, I don't know, for you, this, you can stream just so much, and at some point your mind gets sort of a little bit dizzy from it. You don't know one streaming thing from another. They sort of all blend into one big mishmash. So it's really nice to pick up a book and just to sit down and calmly read a book. And particularly if you read a book of poetry. And, of course, Jim Lamb, who is a contributor here, and he does the literary gems. As a matter of fact, let's pull up a literary gem from Jim Lamb, because I want to just talk for a minute about his book. It's called Dark Fruit. It's available online. It's in Kindle version right now, and it's really a great book to get. Lovely poems. And again, there, right there, what he does, he has this eclectic assortment of poetry. He might be writing about something very deep and serious. Then he's writing perhaps something as a tribute to his mother. He writes silly stuff, and it's all in one collection. And that's what's so beautiful about poetry. When you learn this magic of words, that any subject, everything is what, in the business you call copy. Everything you do, everything you see, Everybody who opens their mouth becomes copy, something you might use one day in a poem. So let's see which poem we're going to listen to.
This one's called Red Herring.
Oh, this is this is one of his literary gems, Red Herrings, and that's an important one.
Some say the phrase red herring started in the 19th century. It describes a technique used to decide if a hunting dog was truly ready to track down animals, like a fox or a rabbit. After the dog was trained, a smoked herring was tied to a string and dragged across the trail. If the dog ignored the fishy scent, it was ready. If not, it was back to square one. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Great authors use red herrings to distract readers from real clues and hard evidence. The result? A wild goose chase that is both entertaining and engaging, but ultimately useless when it comes to solving the case. Where do red herrings work best? Mysteries and thrillers. Here are a few examples. In The Sixth Sense, well-crafted herrings were so well-placed that people paid to watch that film over and over and over again, trying to figure out what really went on. The Usual Suspects was another film chock full of herrings. That's why the ending was such a stunner. But the granddaddy of all red herrings is Murder on the Orient Express, a story teeming with more fishy twists than Finding Nemo. What makes a great red herring? Well, it should be genuinely plausible, but tinged with a nagging flaw. Take Cary Grant's character in North by Northwest. The villain and his crew think Roger Thornhill, played by Grant, is a secret agent named George Kaplan. The audience knows he isn't. The CIA and FBI know he isn't. Doesn't matter. Why? Because this fast-paced adventure thriller is so filled with relentless twists that there's no time to ponder the possible inconsistencies. Other watchworthy herrings include Shutter Island and The Matrix. But it's a film called The Prestige by Christopher Nolan that interweaves its surprises in such a clever, dark, and nuanced fashion that by the time the story ends, the audience has to take a shower to wash off all the fins and scales left by the slew of fishy tails. And speaking of showers, Alfred Hitchcock's off-the-scale Psycho, in Psycho, set a standard so high for red herrings that you'd need a flying fish to top it. But don't let that stop you from using this intriguing technique, especially if you want to engage and entice readers. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about red herrings.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim Lamb, because that is exactly what I was thinking about the other day. I read so many books, and I get so many cozy mysteries, and I want to thank Kensington particularly, because I get so many wonderful cozy mysteries from them. And one of the things that when I'm getting a mystery, I for me and for my sister, who is really called the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, we just love looking for the red herrings that authors will put in there. And my sister's great at spotting them. Natalie is like, oh, she's an expert. And, well, she also spots typos. She recently, in a very famous author's book, I mean, there were 42, she found 42 typos, which she said, and that was like she gets sort of a kick out of it, I must say. So, you know, but she doesn't read a lot of the thrillers anymore. She usually just sticks with cozy mysteries, but every once in a while with a great book, and I read a thriller and I say, this is terrific. You have to read this book. She will read it. And so, but she's good at that. Very much, she reminds me very much of Carol J. Perry's Aunt Ibby. Aunt Ibby is a former librarian and does research on the computer for in Carol's series of Witch City Mysteries, and it's so delightful to have. I think I've talked to quite a few authors who have ants in their books, and I love that. And for my sister, of course, she's the aunt in the family now, and so she is so delightful. And she just loves to read. And this, again, I had said to her, well, do you want to ever write? And she said, no, for me, it's just I love this process. And just like I do, she reads. And we really started reading because of our mother. And this is why it's so important. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you have. I know very, very wealthy people who buy their kids every book, you know, that comes out. But they don't read the books to the kids. Now, when I was a kid, my mother read comic books to us. That's really all we could afford, other than National Geographic magazines, which we had a subscription to. But for everyday reading, because we were in a very small area, really was nothing there. There was Hazel's little store. And that was it. And we bought comic books and we had an allowance. And when we'd buy them, that would come out of our allowance. But my mother would read them to us. Even when we got older, we would sit there at night before bed, all of us sort of surrounding her. My little brother's, you know, laying on her legs. And she would read the comic books to us and make voices and make noises and make sounds. And that's how we learned to read. So by the time we were, my sister also was reading at a very young age. But for me particularly, at the age of 3, I was reading. I could read every comic book that we had because she would sit there and she would run her finger along underneath the word, and I would just follow her finger. And I remember that so clearly. I mean, this is many years ago, but I remember that, and that's how we learned to read. We didn't have anything special. We didn't have a computer program. We didn't have an electronic device. We didn't have anything. And then the other way that we learned to really use words, we played that game. Because we had long, long winter nights. I mean, long winter days and nights. And we would play the game where you would take a word or you'd take a phrase, and then you'd make as many words out of that as you could. So you would take one word, perhaps, and then just create words from that word. They later on made some kind of a television game about that. But what we did is it taught us the use of, phonics, first of all. And I cannot believe that many schools still do not teach phonics. It's insane. It's insane. If you do not teach phonics in a school, it's nuts. Because you have to teach phonics for people to read smoothly. And they can read anything for the rest of their lives if you teach them phonics. But that's how we learn, and that's what we had fun. I mean, it was that was our joy. And I wanted today to talk to this author. And Elvin, I don't know what happened to him. He was supposed to call in. And the name of his book, I should say it because, you know, I had wanted to promote his book, a very nice book. I don't know. I'm having no luck today. But I do want to talk. Let me just stop for a minute and talk about Elvin James Mensah. The name of his book is Small Joys. And it is really a very touching book, a heartwarming book. And it's about an unexpected friendship that saves a young man's life who's desperately sad, desperately lonely, desperately unhappy. And then he meets somebody who says, well, enjoy your life. Find joy. And as a matter of fact, let's play that song that I wanted to play for him. It's from the band Oasis. And it's called Wonderwall. So we'll play that song now because I was going to play it for Elvin today because in his book, he talks about the band Oasis. And for those of you who don't know, that's a great, one of the best English bands. And they're from Manchester, where I used to do a lot of research.
Throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had it down. Feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead us there are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know.
For Alvin James Mensa. The name of his book is Small Joys, and it just came out a few days ago. And it is a touching book, a book about love, about finding family, about finding friendship, about finding joy in the little things in life. And one of the things that he mentions, of course, in the book is this band, the Oasis. And if you don't know it, it's a great band. It's one of my favorites. And what I love about the book, it's about a guy named Harley who's really been suffering. He's been rejected because of his sexuality, because of his you know, lifestyle. And he finds something in finding sort of a found family, people who love him and people who care about him. It's a very touching story, and I hope that you'll have a look at it. It's called, again, Small Joys. Small Joys. Small Joys filled with a lot of love, and that's a very important thing. So, again, Alvin James Mensa, I'm sorry you didn't make it today. but I wanted to promote the book and to tell people that, you know, life is full of all of these small joys. And in the book, of course, he talks about, because it's set in England, and he talks a lot about bird watching and rugby. And I was hoping he would be talking more about soccer, but he likes rugby. And so, but it's great because I love books set in England. So it's always fun for me. And it is a very warm-hearted book, and it's received some really great reviews, which are well deserved. So again, small joys, and we hope that maybe I can find a time to bring him back on, because I would like to talk to him. And that's what I want to do here, you know, for both of these authors today. Although we've had problems getting them on the line, they're both debut authors. They've made this decision to get their words down on paper, and you have to admire them so much and give them that opportunity that they need to get out there and promote their books, because it is not easy for authors, even for the very famous authors, to get any traction. They have a few months of time when a book comes out, because 1,000 books a day are released on Amazon, and so it means that they need our encouragement. And one of the things that you can do, remember always, I've told you this before, if you like an author, please pre-order their books. Always pre-order, because it really makes a big difference on Amazon, on their algorithm. They have a very complicated algorithm, but they love pre-orders. So if you pre-order a book, always check your favorite author, whoever it is. If they've got a book coming out, pre-order it for them. And it is really, it's magic what you're doing by pre-ordering an author's book. And I know Carol J. Perry will be having two books coming out, both series. I mean, she's got Witch City Mysteries, and she's got wonderful Haunted Haven mystery series set right here in Florida, which we love. And so please check out Carol J. Perry and pre-order her books. And we have some other authors that you know, if you like an author, go there, check what's coming up. And even if it's 6 months out, pre-order it now. And Amazon starts clicking, clicking, clicking. Talk about quadratic equations. they must have some heck of equations. So make sure you check that out. Anyway, so it's a day. What can we do? We have to enjoy every day. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And you never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. Oops, some music is playing. I have to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. It's one of those days, Ed, but you got us through it. Thank you so much. Everybody, be well. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now.